The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome into the How To Podcast. I'm Luke. That's Ben.
And I'm Ben.
Ben, what's happening, man?
You know, actually, big news. Quick follow up. I think on the last podcast, I traveled to Charlotte, North Carolina last week for a franchise summit. So there was a summit, and then we have expos.
Is this you setting up a recap from last week? You have to do a quick recap of what we talked about in case people didn't listen to it. And then say what it is. Yeah, you go, all right, quick recap. So last week we were talking about franchising. My wonderful business box painting has started as a franchise. Yada, yada, yada. However you want to phrase that. Then you went to the thing and you tell us the new information. But what you do is you do a quick synopsis. And then what it does is it intrigues people and they go, ooh, I need to hear more about that. Do you want to try again?
If you want to hear more about it, you go back to the other episodes.
Okay, but tell them what they would hear if they went back to the other episode, you dingus.
So we talked box painting. I've made it into a franchise, right? Filed the FDD document officially as of January 14th, which is super exciting. And coupled with that, we won't talk too much about it today. I mean, I don't think unless.
Oh, I forgot something. It's up to you. Okay. I didn't hit record on the video. Do you want video again? I'm just saying it because you keep fussing because this is the first time I've ever seen you not wearing a hat. You've adjusted your hoodie like 12 times so people don't see your hairline. But
I don't care about the hairline.
Oh, please. You've touched your head 15 times since we started. You never touch your hat that much.
Well, I mean, I can throw a hat on and then I don't touch my head.
And then when I say hairline, it's more of a lack of hairline. Your forehead looks like a five head.
At least five.
Okay.
Like, look at that. This is running away.
That's pretty good. When are you going to just give up on it?
What's that?
When are you just going to give up on it?
Oh, I don't think I ever really will. I'll hold on.
Until the very bitter end.
And just keep rocking hats. At the end of the day.
But no razor blade to scalp is what I'm asking.
I don't think so. No. And a lot of that has to do with the shape of my head. It's very football shaped.
It does have a point.
It does come to an abrupt point. Yeah.
All right. Well, no video this week.
No video this week.
Just for anybody listening to this podcast, we're flirting with the idea of publishing the videos for these. We have not committed to it yet. I interrupted what you were saying, though, and I apologize, and I'm leaving it in. So don't worry about trying to transition.
So I traveled to Charlotte last week for a franchise summit, and it was super exciting because the way this worked out was the company that I consulted with had hosted the summit. And the only thing we needed to provide was the airfare to get out there. And it was neat because there were 8 or 9 companies that had gone through the process, filed their FDD for the franchise Genesis system that they have. And then they had about another 30 business owners from across the country that were prospects for them. And so this was an opportunity for me to look at the lens of other businesses and how they're thinking franchising and how that impacts them. So I really enjoyed that part of it. And then coupled with that, it was the opportunity to meet with these people that I've only done Zoom calls with like for the last year, and to sit and talk with the lawyers and these consultants that ultimately will help sell box painting franchises in the coming expos is a really neat opportunity. And I was excited about that. And a lot of it for me, and this is like, just, we're going to expose all the fears that I have, right?
Sure. This is your therapy session.
It's all therapy in the end. Yes. No, but one of my biggest fears in franchising is that I will ultimately do something that is wrong, but I won't know that it is wrong. Right.
Yeah.
And because it is Federal Trade Commission and stuff like that, the federal government is involved. We just, the stakes are a little bit higher. And so that's where my angst comes from. And a lot of it has to do with the concept that you file your FDD, but you're not registered in every state, right? Because each state has its own rules and regulations through state regulators that are going to dictate how that rolls out. And so being on social media and even in podcasts, the questions that I have are, so what can I say and what shouldn't I say? How far can I go? How far can I not go? And I got a lot of clarity on that. And it made me feel very comfortable to start posting social media content, being on here and talking about it more in depth and the things that I can talk to people about. And that's exciting because there's like, it's almost like that, like you have your dog riding on a leash. And now I feel like that leash kind of got taken off and I get to go, let's go do this thing. And so upon coming back from Charlotte, it's just this nice burst of energy, that entrepreneur energy that I just, here we go. So
let me ask you a question. So it sounds like you were just a spectator there. You just showed up to kind of see what everybody else was doing, or were you actually talking to prospects?
This was not talking to prospects necessarily. This is talking to the consultants and other business owners. So yeah, I would definitely lean more spectator, but the really neat thing that I got to do was I got to do about a 5 to 10 minute little quick presentation about box painting and what we are, how it operates in front of these consultants. There's probably 20 to 30 of them there. The job is literally to sell, to put in front of prospective investors, right? Mm-hmm. And then if they want more information, now they just funnel that to me, right? Okay. So it was a neat opportunity for me to sit and get asked questions that ultimately I'm not thinking about right now before I start getting asked questions that I'm not thinking about. So that was neat. And then the funny part about it is, you know, with social media, you go to things and people have checked you out already. Like they've done their homework. And so I'm standing up in front of these, and this is a quick story. I'm standing up in front of the FCC folks, these consultants, and a young lady raises her hand in the front. Like, and I assume it's just a normal question. And she raises her hand and she goes, are you famous? And I was like, oh my gosh. like just scarlet red, right? Just sure. Scarlet red right from the, like, I was good. I was cool. I can talk about box painting, right? Do that all day. But now just scarlet red hits the face. And the neat part was that by her asking that question, I got to talk about the social media stuff that I do. And then I do get to speak about the foundation more because there is that tie there with all of it. And so, yeah, it was neat to get feedback from these folks that have been doing this for years and eons. And I like that a lot. So
where are we at in the, I mean, in the state of Oregon, in the state of Washington, they said that March 31st is going to be the end date for masks. And, you know, you've been obviously operating your business through a pandemic, but the franchising thing is very different. Where is everybody with the optimism of coming out of the pandemic? Is it a good thing for what you're doing for franchising and all of that? Like, what's the temperature on that?
It is high. The market is hot is the way that I'm going to say it. You know, a lack of supply in basic economics, lack of supplies at one point increases demand at another. It will always be that way. It never stops. They are complete and opposite inverse of each other. And that is neat. So last year's lack of supply generates this demand moving into this year. And I think that, so if you are an investor, right? So you think about this from two perspectives. If you're the investor, you're looking at an inflation, right? We all know that inflation is skyrocketing across the United States. If you're an investor and you have money in franchising, this is an opportunity because you have you've got an inflation hedge that's important to an investor. That's really cool because all of a sudden your money is more valuable and you there's less risk ultimately because of an inflation hedge. So that's one thing. If you're an investor, I think that I look at the market as from the investor side and say, holy smokes, here we go. it's going to ramp up, like the pandemic. And more importantly, the things that I can talk about even on here is, if you want to go look at my item 19, you're going to see how this business, Box Painting, performed through pandemic, and how we come out of that smelling like a rose, my friend, smelling like a rose. I mean, the numbers are great, and it was a very successful year considering we had a massive pandemic and a paint shortage. To come out well in the black is so neat. And if you're an investor looking at the opportunity, the brand is there, the messaging is there, and the numbers match up. So I like that. If you're a homeowner, and these are some things that I actually wanted to talk a little bit about today.
Look at that.
If you're a homeowner looking to do work on your home this year, I think that you need to strike early, strike often, right? If you are the homeowner that is sitting there listening to this and it's like, okay, I give my spouse this list of the things we want to accomplish. And some of those projects are going to be done by us. Some of those are going to be done by other contractors or professionals, whatever that is. If you have any inclination in your mind right now that that project might not be able to get done and performed by you come X date, start getting bids now.
Yep.
You have to get bids now. At current, because of last year's climate and the paint shortage we went through, I moved 25 exterior jobs from last 25 of 176, right, into this year. Those are eating up my March and my April timeframes. And so I am already looking at booking into June and July, and it is currently February. So it's very think Eagle Scout and be prepared, right? Yep. Whether you're going to have the contractor do the work or not, go get a bid so that you know what it might cost and you can get into their mind on what their schedule is. Because I know I'm not the only contractor out there that is stacked with work this year.
Yeah.
I'm like, to give everybody out there an idea, I typically will, by the height of summer, I'm operating with 6 crews. That's height of summer, operating 6 crews, crushing it. I normally will roll those out, and it's kind of this ramp up where it's 1 or 2 crews this time of year where we're just kind of filtering in some interior work. By the time we get to March and April, we're starting to pick things up. I add a couple of crews. By the time we get to May, June, July, August, 5, 6 crews all through the summer.
Yeah.
I'm currently in February rolling 3 and 4. Like we know that we have the work. This is not a concern. It's not a concern of like out producing what's coming in sales. We have the work. So we have to get through the work as fast as we can with what weather we can. So if you are in the great Northwest and you're listening to this or any other inclement climate, get your bids done early, get your estimates with your contractors done early, get an idea of what their calendar is. And be prepared. But that does lead me to some of the tips I wanted to talk about today.
And that's a question that coming out of the pandemic, yes, you want to be prepared, but isn't that the way you should always be operating when you're doing home improvement stuff? Like, isn't that, if 2 years ago, February 2020, you would have given the same advice, right? It's not that different. It's just going, here's a good reason why.
It is the urgency of it, right? Because my expectation as a business owner, I'm not going to be able to go find that amount of labor come summer, right? Yep. The labor issues that we're having aren't going to go away. Getting people to get off their couch or change jobs or make them move for X dollars, we're going to struggle with that still. So if you're a homeowner, I want you to be thinking about the urgency of what this is, because you're going to hit June and it is very likely that those contractors, the good ones, the quality ones, the ones that have the 5-star ratings, they're already booking for 23.
Yeah.
That's like the supply lack last year will carry over likely for at least two to three more years of demand where we will be backed up because of X thing that happened here.
One of the conversations, because my wife and I are doing a little work around our house. We're putting in a new patio. Back patio. She's talking with one of her friends.
Outdoor living space. We call them outdoor living spaces.
Well,
now
we're putting in a patio. Won't be an outdoor living space until we have the furniture and do the whole thing. So, but this was advice, and I want to get your take on it. This was advice that one of her friends gave her. They said, even if you're not at a position where you think you can like buy the nice outdoor patio furniture, just wait. Don't buy the cheap stuff. Don't go. I want to get the house painted. I'm just going to go with the 3-star guy because he can do it now. Doing a half-assed job, buying, you know, half of what you want isn't going to get you all the way there eventually. It's going to cause more work. So buying, you know, in her scenario, she's like, yeah, we bought the cheap furniture. We just had to throw it away. So that was a total loss because it didn't hold up. They've got two kids about the same age as ours. They've got dogs and goats and all kinds of stuff. But it fell apart almost immediately. So it ended up being a total waste. So tell me what happens if I go and get a paint job and it ends up being bad, can't get a hold of the contractor. Now you have to come in and redo the work. How much more work is that for you than just starting from zero?
I think this is a great question. And certainly it'll lead to some of the things I want to talk about again. I love the question. So I equate this concept to something that my father, bless his heart, who he won't listen to this podcast. I know he's not a podcast listener, but he knows this story and he knows it well.
Just slip it onto one of his cassette tapes. And then when he goes to put in Hank Williams, you've recorded with this conversation.
He'd have to record it over the Cranberries on the cassette.
I'm sorry. Wait a second. What? Zombie. The Cranberries? Yeah. Is that that's what your dad listens? How old is your dad? almost 40, so he's like, if he's young, if he had you and he's a teenager, he's still 60, close to it. He's listening to the Cranberries.
He's rocking it.
All right,
little Mary, and back in the day, we'd be traveling and listening to Mary Chapin Carpenter, right?
Yeah, that fits a little bit better. The Cranberries is like mid 90s.
Cranberries was a tape. The Cranberries was a tape that he had.
Yeah, was it like the tape your older sister left in the car? And then he put it in because this is bad.
No, not at all. I'm the eldest and it wasn't my tape.
Yeah, so. That's right. You were listening to George Michael.
We had that conversation. Okay. So a conversation that I had with my father about 6 years ago, almost to date, actually. So we were getting ready. My parents were getting ready to have an outdoor living space put into their home.
Sure.
Right. Coincidentally, I was getting my contractors.
Was it put into their home or put next to their home?
Well, attached to their home. It was,
adjacent.
A gable end that came off. It was concrete pillars, you know, stone.
They were doing
pillars.
The whole thing.
A very whole thing. The year, so they know that this is in their vision, right? They know that in the coming year, this is going to happen. And in a conversation, they originally had like this, just a deck with a deck with light support structure that had the corrugated plastic top, the greenhouse glass corrugated, like super cheap. Just
so nice.
Yeah, like plastic. It gets that really nice film of mildew that just starts to grow.
It makes your double wide feel like a double and a half wide.
At least a double and a half, maybe a double and three quarter.
Yeah, there you go. Not a three wide, not a triple wide.
It's not that big.
No.
But so they had this deck, and the deck underneath the patio was beat up. But they know that they're going to be doing this. They know that in their mind, this next project is going to be an outdoor living space. And this deck, this structure is all gone. It doesn't exist anymore.
Yep.
My father that summer had purchased a horrible product that would go by the wayside. It was called, for the listeners out there, Bear Deckover. The claim for Bear was that this Deckover product, basically you didn't have to do any prep, right? You just roll it on nice and thick and this stuff holds up forever.
Deckover,
right?
It's like rhino lining for your deck.
Yeah, except that the rhino lining is not actually, like, it can't even handle a Tweety Bird's little claws, right? Yeah. Like, it's absolutely horrible. So I told him, I was like, listen, don't go buy that product. That will not, I promise you, that won't last a month with your dog, the foot traffic, the barbecue that's sitting on it, the metal furniture that we have, right? You're dragging, it won't last a month. He said, no, no, no. Now, listen, his son is about to be a professional contractor, like with a license. And he's the old man himself, he's not going to listen.
Yeah.
Right. Because that's what fathers do. We don't listen. That's our role. He goes and gets himself the Bear Deck Over product. I'm screaming at him like, you're wasting. Here goes your weekend. Here goes $200. You shouldn't even do it. It doesn't matter. The woods, you're not protecting anything. No joke. A month later, we're out there on the deck and their dog comes walking by and has like a chunk of the Bear Deck Over stuck to her paw, right? Because her claw, her claws dug into the deck over
and pulled it right off.
Just lifted it off. She's walking around like she's got a ice slipper on. She, you know, they're doing that thing where they like try and get it off. And I looked at him and I was like, see, told you so. And now, mind you, this is, you should, the things you should never say to your father.
Told you so is one of them. Yeah.
That's not going to go over well. You definitely got the eye rolls there. But when I think about the opportunity cost, right, of what you're talking about, where, yeah, you can go get that cheaper furniture, but it's not going to last. You know it won't last. If you were to do that, for you is just an example, I would, like, don't go buy it new. Maybe find, if you need the furniture, go hop on Craigslist, go another route, find a cheap route just to get yourself some outdoor furniture. I get it, because you still want to sit down.
Well, right? We've got the old stuff. That's fine. You know, but 100%, those stop gaps are what end up killing you, is because it ends up being a waste of time and a waste of money. And the idea that you spend a little more to get a lot more, you have to weigh those costs. But it's home improvement is no question. And my father and I were having a very similar conversation, because we're looking at doing, you know, some work to the inside of the house as well. And he used to, before he retired, he was a handyman. That's what he did. He's like, I can take care of this. I can take care of that. I would hire somebody to do this. I'm not getting on a ladder to paint that. And it was very much that conversation, but it's, and I think we've done this as a podcast. It's figure out what you can do and then hire somebody to do the things that you can't. Because the amount of time that you will save and the end result that you get when you're not teaching yourself to do something as you do it and making it up as you go, and you end up with something that's crooked or half done or done poorly. But that's the one, though, is that half done. Or you have a project that's sitting there that you've been working on forever and it never actually gets done. That's what kills you.
And
everybody's been to that house.
And everybody's, and the thing is everybody's experienced that too. It's ultimately defeat. You look at the project as it's happening. If you're the one performing it, right? What happens is all of a sudden you get to a point where it's like, man, I don't even want to go do that anymore. Like the excitement of doing it has now, the luster of it is gone. And so all of a sudden we procrastinate it. We just stretch it out, whatever that is. So the thing that I was going to talk about today in this concept of how to was the idea that I so often in this time of year, I get the questions of how do I know if the house is ready to paint? What does that look like? What does that feel like? And more specifically, what timeline am I on based on the warning signs that I'm seeing now, right?
Yep.
Because in a homeowner's mind, we always go to, oh my gosh, this is an emergency. I have to do it now.
Yep.
It's not that way. So, and here's I'll roll through my examples on this. And for anybody out there that's listening in a blog post, know that this will also be on the blog. I have this written out in some of the things that are key indicators that I'm looking for.
Question for you though, before we get into your list, we just passed Groundhog's Day. Do any of these tip Bill?
It does not.
Okay. I don't know if that's good or bad, but it's I just wanted to check if anything was groundhog related. I would love it if there was a blog post from like Box Painting that was like, oh, sorry guys, if you're thinking that 6 weeks from now you're going to be getting painting done, there's a varmint in Pennsylvania that just saw his shadow. So tough luck.
Don't even try yet.
Just saying.
So the warning signs, though, I think they're so important, because as a homeowner that's relatively uneducated in what homeownership is, when we walk into our new home, it's daunting. We're not used to being the ones that need to have the eyes on the house. And in your head, and I'm going to ask you this question. When was the last time you or your wife physically walked around your home, the whole home, looking at the siding, just gave it a quick 15, 20 minute look?
So we got our entire house painted, well, not last summer, summer before, right? So we're going on a year and a half that it's been painted. So we did that full walk around. We just pulled up the concrete slab that we had on the back to redo it. So on the exterior of the home, we just did that. We're looking at doing a little change to our kitchen and doing some paint. So we've done it very recently. And we've done it a couple different times because we just did the walkthrough with my father. So we're looking at doing some improvement. So we just did it. Before that, been a while.
Probably a year, right?
Probably even further than that. I know we did some touch-up painting maybe last summer, but we didn't look at all of the details. I don't think we'd ever done a walkthrough before we painted the house. We kind of knew we wanted to paint it, so we intentionally didn't look at it. We're like, we'll get to it.
That right there is what all homeowners do. If I go look at it, suddenly now it's real, right? Yep. Like if I look at the problem, now I know that the problem, it's not that I'm guessing there might be a problem. Now I know there's a problem there and I need to go take care of that. And in my head, it's an emergency. So here's step one. The first thing that I think about, okay, so blanket statement, I encourage all homeowners to walk around your house about once a quarter.
Real quick. You keep saying there's no emergency. What's an emergency for your home?
We'll get into that.
Leaking pipe. Okay. We'll get into it.
I want to go through we'll define that in these five very specific spaces that I have. So
you're very prepared today.
Thank you. So, well,
it's throwing me off.
For the record, though, this is your help getting the blog up because then wheels turn and now we're putting content out on the website. We're synchronizing here.
We might even post the video for the next podcast. We're moving.
The opportunities are endless is where we're at. That's how I feel about it.
Okay, so
step one. Step one is on the first walk around, as you thinking that maybe do I need to paint my house? I want you to spray water on it. Spray water on it. See what happens. And here's what you're going to see. Either the water will bead off like water on a duck's back.
You're saying bead off.
Bead. Yeah. What did I say?
No. Just make sure people are right. I don't know how gross our listener base is. I'm just checking.
But yeah. So if it beads off, if that water truly beads and it's shedding away, you're good. Because what we're saying there is there's sheen on the paint still.
Okay.
There's still sheen that is holding up. If all of a sudden that water absorbs into the paint and it actually makes it typically look darker, suddenly the sheen is gone.
Yeah.
Sheen is the very first thing to go in any paint scenario. Sheen always goes first. Okay. It's not going to peel and crack first. You just didn't see the sheen go first.
So why does it peel and crack? The moisture gets behind it, expands, contracts, and then
We're going to get there. I'm prepared. I'm all prepared.
Well, you today. Could just answer the questions when I ask them. I know you want to go in order.
There's a process
all
here.
All right.
Now, so we're looking. So that's the first step, right? Yeah. Now, with that being said, in my mind, I believe if you have no sheen on your paint, you are 1 to 3 years from needing paint.
Okay.
Like needing paint. Yeah. You don't have to paint yet this year. Don't feel like it's an emergency.
Sure.
Right? The paint itself is still holding up. The sheen is not.
Cool.
Right? Difference in what we're talking about there. The next thing that will come is that you're going to start seeing noticeable color changes and fade. Noticeable color changes and fade.
And that's going to be, so if there's a spot that has more weather exposure, is that a good place to look? So, you know, little covered patio area, next to like the corners of the wall, where's the best place to look that it's obvious?
Absolutely. So let's imagine you have a one-story home. You're looking below the 4-foot line. And here's why. You have an eave that comes over and overhangs that wall. the upper wall is going to be great. From your eye line up, you expect no problems at all. That's the expectation. From your eye line down, that's where you want to start looking a little bit more diligently. And the reason we're looking for color fade is because what we're saying there is that the sheen has gone. The sheen's already gone. And the reason we're getting color fade is because the sheen is gone. The UV rays are now penetrating that colorant, not even the paint yet. It's penetrating the colorant that's in the paint, and it's discoloring it and it's oxidizing it to a degree that it is actually changing the color.
Are you going to see that in darker colors first then?
Absolutely. Okay. When we say darker, I want to be really clear about this. Ooh. I want to think primary colors first. Red, yellow, green, blue.
Okay.
Now, there are varying... I don't like to say darker. I like to use the word saturated.
Green is not a primary color, by the way. That's a combination of yellow and blue.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Unless you're using light. Unless you're using light.
Greens are still terrible for paint. I apologize to any art teachers that are listening, and there are going to be a couple. Oh, yeah. This idiot doesn't know anything about color.
I got it. Well, here's the other thing. If you're projecting light, green is a primary color. Yellow is not. It's different with projected light than it is. But we're talking about paint, and I am what my brother calls artsy fartsy. So I know your primary colors, your blue, your yellow, and you're red. You can mix all colors from those three.
From those two. That's primary colors. It's a solid statement.
Good. But making sure, I mean, you prepared, but you're still not as smart as me. I just want to make sure. Just making sure our listeners know I'm here for a reason.
Absolutely. But yeah, so primary colors, saturated colors. Those are your benchmarks that are going to fade faster. Yep. And the reason that happens has to do, like, this is, we're gonna get into some science of paint here, but it has to do with the percent of solids that exist in the paint and that the colorant is binding to those solids. If you have so much colorant and not enough solids for them to bind to, you get color fade faster because there's nothing for the colorant to bind to hold it firm.
Very popular color seems to be right now, shades of gray.
Certainly.
Right. The darker you go with like a charcoal or something like that, is that a good choice for duration? Or, I mean, I know that you don't like to, you don't like to tell people what colors are good and bad. We've had that conversation. I'm not suggesting that you would, but for a color fade, if you want to go, I want to hold on to this for a few more years, the lighter the shade, the more white in the base, the better, I would assume.
Ultimately, yes. Okay. As a generalized statement, yes.
But the other side of that is if you have worries about any buildup on the edge of the paint, like you're going to see the mildews and the mold and all of that faster, dirt. Yeah. Yep. So.
Absolutely. So there is this balancing act. So, but noticeable color change is the next thing that you're going to see. And when we start talking noticeable color change, now you're 1 to 2, 3, you know, your 1 to 3 year timeline, you're moving into the 1 year timeline. We're now at the point where probably in the next 1 to 2 years, you really need to start looking at painting because the next step is the peeling and the flaking, right? Where we actually see paint, actual paint, not colorant, but the paint lifting from the home. You see raw substrates underneath, whether that's fiber cement, wood, vinyls, whatever, but you're seeing the actual substrate underneath. Now you're actually getting moisture that is penetrating into the substrate. And that is a problem. There's nothing protecting it now, right? So step three is if you're, you know, seeing that chipping, that flaking, and you're noticing those things, my stance is you are at the point where you need to paint. At minimum, if you're a homeowner on a budget, throw some primer on it. Primer can last through a season and it'll protect it enough. It might be unsightly. It might not be aesthetically pleasing, but in your mind, what I want you to be thinking about is as I move through this list, 1 through 5, imagine that basically every year you wait, add 10% to the labor cost.
Really? Okay. So
and over again, it will just continue because the material cost will also go up a little bit, but the labor cost will always go up about 10% year over year.
So you're seeing paint fade, a good time to call and go, hey, when can you get me on the schedule?
Sure. Yep.
And then you see the chipping and painting. Most likely, it's pretty, like, even when we bought our home, the previous owners left like the big gallon of whatever leftover paint we had of the other color, right? So if we were seeing fading or whatever, if we put that on there, it's probably not going to match perfectly, but better than primer.
Absolutely.
But if we get to cracking and peeling, it's go out and do some work and schedule your painting.
Okay. Yep, absolutely. Get much more aggressive or diligent about what you're trying.
Protect your investment, make a phone call. But you need to call crying. It's too late. I've ruined my home. It's
all falling down.
Get on the calendar.
Get on the calendar. Because the next step, right, after number three, surprisingly, it gets worse. It can get worse.
Sure.
The next step after peeling and flaking is you're going to start to see fungus grow. If you've got a raw substrate, we all remember the LP crisis of the late 90s. And if you don't, it was a siding that came out. It was a siding that came out from a lumber company. And ultimately what happened was there was a fungus that reacted to water. And when that water made contact with the raw substrate of the siding, literal mushrooms started growing from the siding.
Okay? Nice.
Now, this can happen in any wood substrate. If there's a fungus that exists, all wood, I mean, they grow, they're in the woods. They have
this
fungus
on them. This is what happens. Now we're going to go into biology? Off the biology. You're already pissed off the science. Art teachers are pissed off. Now we're going after science teachers. Is that what you're doing?
Get them all. Get them all on my side or off my side. So, but the next step is that fungus. And you're going to see mold. You're going to see the fungus growing. And if you're seeing that, you have reached critical mass. We are now at the point where this needs to be taken care of, because what's happening is you also have moisture behind that piece. That has that mushroom growing out of it, there's moisture behind that. What's behind that? That's a fun discovery that we're going to find out when we pull that piece of trim or siding off. But quite literally, what you're going to see is the pricing just keeps going up as we move down this list. And that is unfortunate for the homeowner.
So if we have rot and fungus and all of that.
We're not even too rot yet. Rot's the last one.
Rot's the last one. Okay, so preview question for you on that.
Yeah, no.
Is that growing from the outside in or the inside out?
Could be both. That's the crazy part.
You look at it, you show up and you look at it, you have no idea how bad it is until you get in there. It could be okay.
Yep.
Not necessarily more likely that it's worse, but it could be a lot worse.
It could be a lot worse. I mean, there are nightmare scenarios out there, right? Where you have a leaky window. And I've certainly run across them as the owner of box painting, where we run across issues that we have a leaky window and it's draining from the top, the second story, all the way down. And this whole wall had to go, right? The whole wall had to be rebuilt, redone. We've had that nightmare scenario. We've also had the scenario where we caught it early and it's literally just the trim board. Yep. We got that taken care of, dried in, we're good to go. So just know that, again, we come back to the concept that all of these things are preventative measures. That's our goal. Is so often people think of paint as the emergency stop thing. Mm-hmm. No, painting is preventative maintenance on your home. Beautification, aesthetically pleasing, yes. Preventative maintenance is what it is. It is not designed to fix everything. So,
but it's also not just lipstick.
It's not just lipstick. No, not especially with the technology of the paint these days. So then we get to five, and five is we're seeing rot. And when we talk about rot, I want to be really clear about a couple of things. The things that you're looking for, it's not all of a sudden going to be just pouring water out of it. Like, I think that in homeowners' minds, like they have this vision of rot as like, there's water pouring out and there's rot there and like it's squishy. It's like a sponge. No, most of the time dry rot is dry. It's crazy.
Hence the name.
And when you go up to it or you poke at it, it literally sounds like popcorn just popping. It's just crunchy. I think it's very crunchy. And the worst part about it is that you can have rot behind a paint coat, right? So you can see the paint looks fine. You go poke at this thing and all of a sudden you're poking through the paint and it's just crazy. And so if you've reached the point where you're seeing dry rot, that is, you're talking, what we're saying there is that it takes years for dry rot to come into play of sitting in moisture, getting wet, and then going into a dry season. And it's that cyclical effect of that happening over and over that creates dry rot.
Yeah.
It does not happen in a day. It does not typically happen in a year. It is a process of prolonged exposure to the elements. So if you're a homeowner, just know that the bid that you're going to get from most every contractor when we're looking at going to say something like includes X, Y, and Z, because I can look at this trim and know that I know the cost to repair that trim. But anything, and then the caveat line is anything found on discovery, build it time and material.
Yep.
That is a statement in a bid that for every homeowner you want to avoid. And if you stick to steps 1 through 4, I promise it can help avoid that happening at step 5. Because at step 5, me, the contractor, I have no idea what's behind that wall. But I do have the skill to go find out what's behind that wall. You just might not like the answer.
Yeah.
And once we open it up and it's exposed, there's no going back.
Yeah.
So I don't say, and I say that not to instill fear. I want you to pull urgency out of that. That's what I want you to do is I want the listeners to sit there and say, okay, this is the urgent moment. If I go out and start spraying water on my home and it's beaten off, we're good. Let it sit, let it mellow, right? Do your thing. But if you're seeing other warning signs, know that you are on a timeline and it's damn near universal. I mean, it's not
fading. You're going to want to consider it in the next 1 to 3 years. You see cracking, put some paint on it, protect it. You're probably a little late, but
you're probably a little late.
You have time. Yeah. You may or may not see fungus before rot. Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah. You could. It's possible.
If there's fungus among us, you are way late. Anything you can do in the meantime while we're waiting for the next scheduled appointment?
Yeah. On fungus, you know, there are, so the way I would say this is there is a substrate.
Don't paint over the mushrooms. That's not going to do anything.
Well, actually, so it's interesting. It's not paint. It's called copper green.
Okay.
Copper green can be picked up at your local Home Depot, your Lowe's. It goes on like a primer. And what it does is copper green, it stops rot from continuing.
Okay.
So an example would be of where we use it. We pull off the trim boards that are rotted around a window. And what we find behind there is that the sheeting behind the trim is it shows the mold, right? Maybe, but it's not, when you poke at it, it doesn't have the crunch. It's not dry rotted yet.
Okay.
This is the application for copper green right then and there. Because what we're going to do is we're going to stop rot from continuing. And because we're going to make sure that we install our trim correctly, we know that we're going to have a dry space moving forward.
Yep.
So that water can't come into contact with that again. So we stop that rot. And so that's how we fix that instead of replacement of the whole wall, because it's not necessary. The other rule that I just want to throw out there that we use, because a lot of times homeowners will ask the question of, well, when do I use my due diligence and replace the board versus repair the board, yeah, right? And there's a general rule of thumb in construction where it's the 15% rule. If greater than 15% of the area is damaged or whatever,
yeah,
whatever we're talking about, if there's greater than 15%, replace. If it's less than 15%,
repair.
Okay. So again, we can get into the weeds on that a little bit if you really want to, but I don't want to.
Okay. Looking for cheat codes, because I'm always looking for shortcuts. If I don't want to go and spray my house down, wait for the rain to stop, just go outside and look if I can see it beating.
Absolutely. And that's literally like, if for those of you out there that played contraband back in the day, that's up, down, left, right, A, B, A, B, right?
What is wrong with you? It's contra, not contraband.
Oh, sorry.
Jeez.
Contraband is the whole thing.
Contra.
Still a great game in our youth.
Yeah, and I'm not 100% you got the code right, but yeah, it's because you only have to hit select start.
I didn't do the select start at the end.
Okay.
I can't remember, it is up, down, left, right, left, right.
I don't know. You know who would know is the internet, but my brother used to be able to remember the Mike Tyson code. Let's see.
Mike Tyson's punch out.
Just in case somebody's listening, I want to get this right. Contra password.
because we don't want any hate comments on there. Like, these guys don't even know what they're talking about.
Yeah. So it says here, according to GameMite, what you want to do is, yes, you go on the title screen, press up, up, down, down, right, B-A, start. No select start? Ooh.
No yeah. select start? That just, doesn't sound.
Oh, that's 30 lives. That's 30 lives if you do that. Steal life. A bunch of codes on here on GameMite. But yeah, that's the one. If you want to steal a life from another player, you hit A and B at the same time. Shoot higher while ducking. Another what? Okay. Anyways, that's what it says. So 30 lives, no select start, just start. And you go up, up, down, down, left, right, B-A, start.
Got it. I was A-B.
This is according to GameMite. This is not according to me. I'm not going to pretend that I remember. Here's the thing about Contra is I never owned Contra. We rented Contra and stayed up all night playing it till we passed it. We did that with a few games. I remember Contra for sure, but it was, I have three older brothers and we had a next door neighbor and we would go and get the game from Albertsons. You'd pick up your NES rental and then we'd bring it back and you would sit there and play it without sleeping until the next morning. We got away with that a few times. Our parents were like, yeah, go nuts.
You've got a 24 hour rental. Yeah, you're not going to waste those 24 hours sleeping.
Yeah, it's like 28 or 48 hours. But yeah, we would just kill ourselves just playing those games. Here's a question my brother asked me the other day is, have you ever beaten Mike Tyson?
Oh, no, I never did.
Okay. So here's my quick story because it's pretty funny, I think. As a kid, my brother he'd wipe out everybody. He'd just go, he'd run right through. In a one-player game with four kids, well, five kids because I have a sister, but with three kids in the wings waiting to play was not that much fun. So he got the majority of the turns. This was one of the failings of the NES, but also one of the positives about it was if you were good, you got to keep playing the entire time. My brother Frank would play all the way through Tyson's Punch-Out. He would play all the way through Eight Worlds of Game.
Mario.
And you'd never get a turn. It was like, all right, Luigi, sit back and watch how it's done. And he would just play through eight levels. Now, that's the original Mario Brothers game, not the Super Mario Brothers.
How old's the oldest brother on this end?
So he's like, not the oldest. He's 3 years. Frank is 3 years older than me. Mark is four years older. So he's second in of the four brothers. But so I didn't get as much Tyson time as he did, as you would expect, because he was better at it. But I always had a hard time with Super Macho Man, but I could take him out every once in a while. And I'd get to Tyson, and I could fight him tough, but I never got him as a kid. Then we got the Genesis. We moved on. Life moved on without Mike Tyson and his punch out. And he'd gotten beaten by Buster Douglas at that point. Nobody really cared. So we put on the game. I'm like 21, probably 20 or 21 years old. And a few buddies come over to the house, and we're sitting around drinking beers.
Absolutely.
And we have just hooked up the NES.
Absolutely, you did.
And we throw in Mike Tyson's punch out. And we're waiting for some, like we're going somewhere. It wasn't like, hey, let's all come over and play Punch Out. It was like first guy arrived. He's like, oh, does that work? We throw it in. I start playing. Then slowly, one by one, like everybody else in the crew starts showing up.
Nostalgia is just thick. It's like thick in the air. I can just feel it.
Yep. And I played all the way through, never lost a round, and beat every single dude in the entire thing. Got Super Macho Man on the first try. And beat Tyson and just drop the controller. They're like, man, how many times? Like, you had to do that all the time when you were a kid. I go, that's the first time I ever beat Mike Tyson. And then I just dropped and I walked.
Just dropped the mic.
Boom. And like, no way. And I was like, first time and only time. And we set it up, I don't know, a handful of years ago. And I tried it again.
Put that on a resume.
Okay. If you can beat Mike Tyson.
Put it on a resume. So like, I can't do it.
Yeah, there you go. Like I said, I don't know if I can do it, but just one day I was on fire and there's something about like, you know, every time another dude showed up, the testosterone in the room goes up. And so my focus went laser-like. And then I was like, Don Flamingo, done. Soda Popinski out. Sandman, piece of cake. And it was just,
that's
just
awesome. I'm impressed that you remember all the names. I don't. Well, I can't. That's impressive.
I don't know if I could list them off in order. I probably could, but yeah, no, I definitely played my fair share. But yeah, last time I played, I got to Super Macho Man. I had a little trouble with him, and I think on the second try I got to Tyson, but I couldn't beat him. But just the amount of time that you have at different points in your age to commit to video games.
Yep.
So you and I are both parents. You have a 7 and 10 year old. I have 2 5-year-olds. My kids are playing on their tablets or the Nintendo Switch, or we've got them playing a little bit of PlayStation, right? All kids are doing this. Here's my question to you as a father. Has nothing to do with your kids.
Go. Oh, okay.
Think back to when you were a kid.
Okay.
Think of all of the best video gamers that you knew, that you still know, and how successful are they in life?
Well, first, success is a floating thing.
It is.
Success is a floating thing.
But burnout to professional person scale. Because I was trying to figure this out. My brother's doing just fine. He's great.
Yeah,
married, couple kids, has a good job. He's doing great. He was the best video gamer in the family. I don't know that he's the most successful in the family, but he's certainly not. He's not struggling at all.
So there's one guy that actually comes to mind from high school, and so this particular his name's Jason, and he now right.
You
so
and I are this close to the same age. We both know at least 45 Jasons from school, right?
At least. Okay. Oh, absolutely.
That name was popular.
It was very popular. I know a guy named Jason, and I don't even really keep contact with him much anymore. But I do. I follow what he's doing. And back when we were kids, you would go to his house, and his house was the house where they had every electrical component and gaming system that could exist on the planet. And it was so cool because they also at this house, they had a small AM or FM radio tower coming off their house, and they did a little radio show out of their house, right? Okay. And it was super cool. Like I can put myself in this memory very vividly and remember listening to their radio station. I live 3 blocks away, and that's I'm finding out about this, like that these guys are doing a radio show at night. And I'm like, I need to tune in.
Sure.
Like that's crazy. So Jason was very good at all the games. All the games was what he was good at. And he is the only person that I know that took that thing from childhood, and it's now his career. Nice. So he does a big YouTube channel that he has and has a good following, but he does nostalgia games. Yeah. He does the new games, but he is what you would call a professional gamer on.
Yeah.
Like he has the Twitch stream, all those things. So he's the only person I can point to that I would say made a living out of what this was for the newness of what video gaming was. But beyond that, no. Anybody that's dedicated like that much time, I can't think that they're...
Yeah. Well, anyway, my thought is, because I'm just looking at my kids going, all right, how much... Because my wife and I were playing Mario Party with the two kids.
Oh, yeah.
And she looks over at me. She's like, how many parents are playing video games with their kids right now? And I just have to feel like our generation, it's abundant. Like, we're all like when my parents were looking at it, they're like, oh, I played some Pong. Let me see if I can get in there. And I remember Pac-Man. Let me just see if I can. But I feel like today, first of all, we have way more of a tolerance for it. And I don't know the numbers on it. Maybe we can get some, comments on the podcast or whatever. But I can't think of anybody I know that like was naturally adept and played a lot of video games that completely burnt out. And but at the same time, I don't know that it was. And it's probably just like anything else. It's probably not a key indicator of like, yes, you're definitely successful if you did it. But I'm just looking at the video games my kids play, and they've got early exposure. Doesn't bother me one bit. Tell me if I need to be worried. So,
no, not at all. And like, so it's interesting because the daughter certainly enjoys some video games, but the son at 7, he's much, much more. This is his space. I can feel that this is a space he likes to be in. And in particular, when I say that, through the lens that when he's off the video games, because doesn't mean he plays them all the time.
Yep.
But when he's off the video games, he's creating things the same way he's doing things in Minecraft or Roblox all those other things. He like. They show up yesterday after school, right? Get them off the bus after school. And I had gotten I had went and I gotten these, I needed some paper cups just like I, because I was doing an epoxy thing with a little craft project of my own. And I had this little stack of cups. My child, 7 year old, he hits the door. He looks to the right. He sees the cups. He literally just grabs the cups. Like, I don't need like, just like as if they were his. And yeah. He always, like in his mind, he knows what he's about to do with these things. He just grabs them. I'm like, what you doing there, bud? He's like, gonna make something
nice.
And he goes and he takes them, and he ends up making a big piggy bank out of these cups, right? Nice. And so he's using this blue tape because I mean it's Craft Central, right? Dad's got tape all over the place because he's a painter, right? Yep. Boxes everywhere because of merchandise or whatever. So it's Craft Central here. I'm saying, please don't run with scissors. Like yeah. That's my one request. Yep. Don't run with the scissors. That's where it ends.
Sure.
So no, I very much like, I'm okay with the video game thing. It yep. Like, I understand we need to limit the screen time. I'm down for that. But
dude, I need to limit my screen time. The amount of time I spend in front of a screen doing a sales job. Get out of here.
This is part of it. Yep. But yeah, I do recognize that there's, it's interesting to have that dynamic of children where the 10-year-old, she likes them, but not the investment level that the 7-year-old is, yep. You know? And so, but it's neat. It's fun. But yeah, I do play some of the video games with them. I don't get on there like, the one thing I have not been able to do is get on there and like build with them, like,
oh,
in,
yeah,
like the Minecraft. Like I've tried, but he's over there like he's got Taj Mahal up in 5 minutes, and I'm like, so you got to hit the A button to do what?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like,
so we play Rocket League, which is like the little cars driving into soccer balls, the whole thing. Dude, my now they're 8 and 9. They just had birthdays. My 8 and 9 year old nephew. The 9-year-old's kicking ass, and the 8-year-old is very quickly getting better than all of us. But all of my brothers and I, that's the one we'll play. We'll get on the PS4 or 5 or whatever. One of them's got a 5.
Chaos,
and
right?
We'll go and we'll play. Up to 8 of us get on there. We'll have our headsets on, and yeah, the kids kick our asses so hard. I played 1-on-1 against my nephew, and my wife was like, "You keep losing. Would you stop playing?" And I'm like, "I'm watching the way that he plays." Here's the thing that I noticed. I'm trying to hit the ball at the goal, hoping it goes in. He is trying to park the ball on the hood of his car and then drive it around me and place it in the goal as if I'm not there. And he's successful at it. And I'm not successful at my endeavor. Dude, yeah. I was like, dude's playing chess. I'm playing checkers. This ain't good. So yeah. And he's just kicking my ass, and I'm like, play another one. Cause I'm trying to figure out what he's doing. Cause I don't know how to level up on that thing, but yeah, it's a whole different thing. But yeah, it's pretty funny watching how smart they get, how quick they get. So I don't know.
It is. It will. And you just think about their age in relation to like the games that they're playing and the advanced things that they're doing. We worked with a rectangle controller that had a cord on it that literally had 1, 2, 3, 4.
Well,
four buttons and an up down.
Well, the limits of 2-dimensional animation and actual abilities of the game. Like the game developers are putting so much more thought. I mean, I just explained to you. I'm sitting online at my house, talking in a headset, watching this, playing in real time against 8 different people that are probably in 5 different houses. And the game responds and reacts so quickly. You have unlimited 3-dimensional movement with the variation of all the buttons. Of course I'm getting my ass kicked. It makes perfect sense, but just the ability to do that. And the reason we started playing was my brother was sick, and he was in the hospital, and we couldn't go visit him. So we set it up online. We all got good enough to play with him. And then we taught the kids, and now they're kicking our ass. So the way it connects people together, my brother had cancer. He was just telling me the other day that he plays with a cancer, it's either a nurse or a doctor at a cancer institute in Texas that he's become good friends with. And because he's been doing so well with his most recent treatment, he doesn't go online as much to play with random people because he has the ability to get up and go hiking and hunting and all the things that he loves to do. And so the husband and wife from Texas checked in on him the other day to make sure he was okay because they had heard from him. And it turned out he was doing better than they expected. So it's like, the ability that video games have to connect people is a whole different thing. I didn't plan on going that direction, but
no, absolutely.
It's great. So anyways, my friend, anything else we need to hit on? So today's episode, how to know when it's time to paint your house.
Yeah. The warning signs. This is a how to identify warning signs that it's getting to be time to paint the house.
That's too long of a title. How to know when to paint your house. God, who put you in charge of titles? You're like, yeah, well, yeah, I mean, yes, it's how to know when to paint your house, but we should also say that it's 1,200 more words than that. Do you know how titles work? Intrigue people. How to know when to paint your house. Does that work?
Up. Yeah, I'm good at it.
Let's get in as few words as possible.
It's not my style, though. No, know
it's
that.
Definitely not. That's why it's an hour podcast. Could have done the whole goddamn thing in 5 minutes.
The title is the content.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening to this podcast. Ben, where do people follow you?
I am the Box Dad on TikTok and Instagram. Also, for any listeners out there, just know that the new promo code for online sales through Sherwin-Williams is active. It is BoxDad22. You can save for every $100 you spend, you get $20 off. Again, online sales only. And yeah, it's real neat, but it's how Sherwin is partnering with me, and I am excited about that opportunity.
Order online, pick up at the local Sherwin-Williams. Order online. Absolutely. Okay, perfect.
Oh, you could order online while you're standing at Sherwin-Williams and still get. And oh, the other cool thing about the discount is it stacks with their other discounts.
Oh, so nice.
The reason we went with a $20 off was because that way we could stack the, like, they do 35%, 40% discounts.
Yeah,
you can stack these up. Nice. So otherwise, we wouldn't have been able to stack them, and that's not, what are we saving? Yeah, so
there you go. So what is it, Box?
Project.
Box what, 22?
Box Dad 22.
Perfect. Box Dad 22, save some money on your paint. If you want to listen to me talk more, Sinner and Saint is on 1080 The Fan on weekends. In Portland, you can listen to it on the Odyssey app. If you want to hear more content from this podcast, just go on to Odyssey or wherever you listen to your podcast and listen to us talk about things more. We'll do this again next month. Ben, always a pleasure, sir. Have a good day.
A pleasure. And see you, Luke.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.